at our office at the beginning. Hopkins.
Chief assistants for the 49th
Corps. Well, we had at that time about 14 people doing the work at our office at the beginning. Hopkins. Hopkins. Cleo. Oris.
Who was the second one?
Oris.
You said Cleo?
Cleo. And then Ornis.
Who was Cleo?
Dick Cleo.
Oh, Dick Cleo. I beg your pardon. Yep. Dick Cleo. Uh-huh.
And Tokoto. And that's about all of our office, just our order office. And when we got out to Ford's to do the full size, mm-hmm. then we took some of the clay modelers and they helped finish it up, finish mm-hmm. full size, full mm-hmm. size. Because right. it had to be precision. It couldn't be just guesswork. Mm-hmm. So then we hired them. And they furnished that for us at our no other extra expense.
Mm-hmm. You had the north wing, didn't you?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Of the engineering.
And the engineering department.
Now, who were your I think Mr. Engel.
Engel. I was trying to think of who out there.
Yeah. Put out there. Yeah.
But Engel supervised it to right. the point where he and Joe Orris mm-hmm. were charged. That was their car.
Mm-hmm.
I called it their car, and everybody else around there called it their car.
Mm-hmm.
We gave them credit for it.
And who were you competing with at that time?
Ourselves.
Yourselves,
yep.
of course.
We didn't know that at that time that Ford had, or Dahlberg and Youngman had Gregory doing the work. Trying to get a car out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's all. Then we heard about what was happening out in the other part of the room, which we didn't know, the other part of the engineering department.
Mm-hmm.
That was one end, and that was where Gregory had his car.
Uh-huh, right. Did you ever see it?
No. No, only in picture.
Only in picture. Yeah. Well, the decision has been made in, is it
1949 car. The dies were started in the latter part of 46.
Mm-hmm.
Dies.
That reason, that late.
So they had to hurry and get, they had a rush program, crash program.
Uh-huh.
And then we had to supervise just to see that everything was working. We had three engineers who were very good
mm-hmm.
that worked with us very closely to see that we didn't get off base. And when we did, they put us on base.
Mm. Remember who they were?
One of them was Charlie Blanton. Charlie Blanton.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main one. That's mm-hmm.
He was the chief body engineer.
Yes. He was very good. So he'd come back and he'd say, well, now here, we got a little something here. The drip molding here, if you did it like this, would it hurt your design?
Mm-hmm.
We'd say, no, well, then do it that way, because we're saving money. And then how about this cut here? How about the hood cut? If we did this, you can't curve it around there because that's going to be a problem if we do that.
Uh-huh.
And this way, that's all right. We can get it just the way you want it.
Great.
We work hand in hand.
Smart.
And they never did that out Ford. They always were pompous about it. The engineer wanted to do this and he's going to do it and nobody could tell him. But
that had been your technique all through the 30s?
All through everything I ever
right.
did.
Yes. You
work with, not against. Mm-hmm. I've told that to Henry time and again. He asked me that one day.
Uh-huh.
He said, we understand that you're getting along fine with this guy. Henry, I said, this is the same. He called, told me, but sure, I always call him Henry, but I wouldn't in front of a lot of people.
Yeah.
But so I call you George, you call me Henry. So I said, that's been, all we try to do is to make you money in our clan.
Mm-hmm.
We don't make it. We make a certain amount to keep living. But we want to make you money. That's our part.
Uh-huh.
And he said, that's a good idea. It's a good way to tell.
Did you have any input into the post-war facelifts of the 46 to 48
line? Well, we drew some pictures for it, but we never accomplished anything.
Because
that was set, again, that was really Gregory's.
He had set that up.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So there were some very good Hey, but we wouldn't disturb that. If there's, right. if it had a good potential, we'd say, well, that's good.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Or that's lousy.
Well, you had some, of course, it was a buyer's market. It was a seller's
yeah.
market.
Yeah.
And you had, of course, the Woody and the Sportsman and the Continental. But in 1948, all that came to a halt
yeah.
as you introduced the 49 Ford. Do you remember anything about the reception that it got?
Reception to Waldorf Astoria, yes. It was very, very wonderful. Mm-hmm. They had the press there.
Mm-hmm.
And
this was in, I think, the summer of 48, wasn't it?
I'm not sure. That's when it was.
Yeah.
But that was just when they just hired Oswald.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they had the banquet that night, and Walter Darwin Teague was there
mm-hmm.
at the meeting. He had no reason to be there, but he was there. And
he'd worked for Edsel Ford back
yeah,
in the 30s.
That's
yeah.
it. So the young man got up and told about how this car was going to be a great car.
Mm-hmm.
And we hoped to success it. And he said, a great contribution of Mr. Oswald.
And
breech machine, sitting like this. And he got up, breached it, right to the, he said, I just want to correct one thing, he said. This car, he said, was styled by George Walker and his staff, he said. And I don't, you forget, and this was the press he talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't want anybody to forget about that.
That's
very good.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would have been Oswald and Rengren, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Oswald had very little
he had nothing to do with it,
yeah.
absolutely. He wanted. He said one day to Henry, he said, well, we'll take care of this. He said, I used to do this with GM. He said, when everything was all shot, he said, I'd pick up the pieces, he said, patch them up. And he said, I don't think there's anything to be patched up about here. That was the story of that one.
You know what Dick Khalil has kept all these years? He's kept the mold for the quarter size model.
He has.
He has that mold, yeah.
Did still. You see it?
In four pieces. Huh?
He did.
Yeah, he kept that. Do you remember that incident?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, he says that when it came time to do the eighth scale,
yeah.
That he asked, he brought a design to Bob Cotto, Holden Cotto, and who apparently was back at Studebaker then.
Yeah.
And said, "I need your help to make a model." And he said they did it on Khalil's kitchen table, and that was the first one. That's not a story you remember.
No. That wasn't a story.
It wasn't a story.
It might have been a story, but Dick always he said one day, he said, "I appreciate what you did." He said, "But I couldn't work over there at Chrysler. They're terrible." He said. He said, "I appreciate what you do." And he said, "You know another thing? I never told them I did the 49. I said, "You son of a bitch. What are you talking about? The Joe Carter and Elwood.
They really, they hit the roof. Huh?
Yeah, sure did. He did so little.
Uh-huh.
He did clay modeling for us.
Yeah,
that's what he did. And he was a blackboard man.
Uh-huh.
And he had a blackboard just when he took the lines and interpreted the onto a blackboard so they could make it. Engineering drawing. That's all he knew, you see. Dick was not a designer. He wasn't even a clay modeler. He was a blackboard man.
Uh-huh.
But I shouldn't have done what I did, was to try to help him.
Mm-hmm.
I helped everybody that way, but I shouldn't have done it with Cleo, because he took it on himself to think that I meant it, that he did everything. So when he told that story, I was upset about it.
Oh, I can see why. Well, the car was a great success.
Yeah.
And you won a fashion...
You won the fashion award on it. And then
Institute
the,
award.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Institute, yeah. Then we...
Mr. Ford was properly appreciative of...
he was very much so.
Yes.
Every time I was around anybody, he always pointed me out as I did the job.
Now, at this time, you're still a consultant, however.
Yes, yes, I was, yeah. And then when they decided to have a vice president in charge
mm-hmm.
of all styles, and this was promoted by Youngren for Oswald.
Mm.
And they had okay. Oswald come out there.
They're both ex-GM.
Yeah. And then what I did was to just mark time, I said, for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't have the new contract, so I didn't do any more work.
They had installed Oswald.
Yep. And then Henry, not as vice president, but just installed.
Yep.
So
yep.
Then Henry called me out one day and said, that's what they wanted to do. They decided that the organization wanted somebody, and I wouldn't do it because, at that time, because I had my own business. And that was true, I told him that. But he said, anything I can do for you, he said, at any time, he said, we appreciate what you did, and very, very much. I said, well, you didn't do what you said you were going to do.
Which was?
$5 million in 5 years.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
I said, this is not... I said, you've jeopardized a couple of my accounts, which was International Harvester and Nash. I said, I can't recuperate those again.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and I don't want any of your money.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew him well enough to say, you're shoving up your ass. I did.
Good. Yeah.
And I was so upset.
That was in 1950?
In 1950.
Uh-huh.
So I left the organization, and I had my home being built down in Florida, down in Bell Harbor.
Bell Harbor, huh?
And that's when Breach came over at our house to tell me they wanted me back, and Henry insisted on having me back and write my own ticket.
About a year later?
Yeah.
1951.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when...
Now, what did he say was the problem? Did he mention that they...
No, not a thing.
He didn't say anything?
Not a thing.
They wanted you back?
He wanted me back. Write my own ticket.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Then he said... I know, number one, what you want. You don't want Youngman around. I said, no, I don't want Oswald around. I don't want George Snyder around. Mm-hmm. They were all just...
All GM people.
GM.
Yeah. Had Breach brought them in?
Youngman brought them in.
Youngman had
but
brought them
Breach
in.
But Breach sanctioned it.
That's right, yeah.
And he had to swallow it.
Youngman was vice president for engineering,
yeah.
Wasn't he? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he left there. He left for, left the GM and went out to some company, South of California.
Who's this?
Youngman.
Okay.
And he wasn't faring very well. So they got a hold of Youngman to come on out as a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
And just before I came into the picture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's all.
What happened? Didn't work out.
Well, it didn't work out because they didn't want him anymore.
Right.
I said I wouldn't come back
right.
Unless he did this. And I didn't need them, they needed me.
Right, yes.
I needed to do
of course, yeah. So you brought your own staff, and so you brought
Horace and Engel and Hopkins.
And, he's a new name.
And, yeah, and...
what was his first name?
What the hell? Huh. So he's in...
Was he one of your staff
yeah.
people?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What
it
was
been,
his
name? It's been a long time.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Ken
Hopkins.
Right.
Then the my Cuban isn't like it used to be.
That's
right. So we had three other fellows out there.
Three key people
besides that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was our staff.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't overpaid. We weren't overstaffed. In other words,
right.
Ford was getting overstaffed.
A lean staff.
Yeah. But we knew at all times what everyone was doing. Ford never did that. They always had to say so and so and so and so
yeah.
to find out four times around what one guy did.
So did you install them as studio heads at that
yes.
time?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And who went where?
Well, ours we parted as head of all Ford.
Uh-huh.
Engel, research and development for all Engel.
Okay.
Special cars because
mm-hmm.
he liked that stuff.
Yes. Right.
And they did that. 100 car, that Lincoln car 100.
Oh, the X-100.
Right,
huh?
We did that.
That's still at the museum.
Yeah.
We have that.
Yeah.
I have. Yeah. It's in bad shape, but we still
oh,
have
sure.
it.
Yeah. And then, let's see, then we had Hopkins on all appointments.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his job, was to see that all the chromes went through this, and all the moldings, and the my son got his moldings and so on.
Oh, yes, right. Uh-huh.
And, well, not quite that bad.
Yeah, right.
But that's what he was supposed to.
Uh-huh.
Then Creel, we had Creel at the time out there at plant.
Uh-huh.
And we had him to see that the clay was there every day,
mm-hmm.
right amount of clay, and then how the clay modelers worked on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he got in tailspin again with the guys that go clay modelers.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, I'd pacify him all the time. He really got ahead of himself.
You're putting out fires. Huh?
Yeah, put the fires out. But that was my job.
Of course, yeah. And so you began working in earnest on the early 50s cars, then?
Yep. And then we started, let's see, and we had a leeway then. We didn't have the count.
Right.
Then that's when Mr. McCauley came in the office.
Uh-huh. Was this Alvin McCauley?
Yes, Alvin McCauley. And then we took on the Alvin McCauley Packard. Then we got...
What did you do for them?
Well, they had a car that was all clay, mm-hmm. but very, very badly done.
Uh-huh.
Even though the Jarda had a lot to do with it. Jarda was a very good designer.
He was working for Packard in the early 50s?
No, he was working for Briggs. And,
still with Briggs after all these years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he and Ed McCauley had been working on it, but they were dovetailing again, and also Swords End again. See, each time they had done a thing with Alvin McCauley knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the...
Was Ed Alvin's younger brother?
Yeah. Yeah. And he was the son of the old man that came in the office.
Right.
Let's see, what else?
Were they working on the Packard Clipper?
Yeah.
Was that
Packard Clipper.
And you had a clay model?
Yeah. And we never told anybody we designed the car.
Really?
We didn't. We just helped.
Helped, okay. Good.
That's
but you contributed a lot to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we did.
And that became fairly successful. Didn't
it was for a while, yeah. They didn't have any money. Then Jim Nance, he left.
James J. Nance?
He had to leave there because they didn't pay him.
Oh, dear.
And then the whole group, the sales manager, everything else, did the same thing. So they just folded up.
Well, an automobile company pick them up there for a time?
Yeah.
Studebaker? Didn't they go with Studebaker?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they combined the two, right. Now, Bill Schmidt was involved with that.
Yeah, Bill worked on it, too. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, Bill did, too.
Bill worked on the Clipper?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bill worked with Alvin McCauley, with Ed McCauley.
Uh-huh.
Be a nice guy.
He's still very, very, going very strong. He has his own design firm. In Detroit.
He has?
He's out there, actually, near Grosse Pointe.
Yes, that's where he lived.
Yes, right.
Now, a lot of water's gone over the dam.
It certainly has, yeah.
We don't know. See, it's a long thing. It's been all these years. It's been since, 1960. I retired in 60.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to put things together in the right perspective is a little bit ambiguous.
I understand.
It's hard to do it.
Well, let's try it. There you are in 1950, early 51. You're still a consultant, but you have the Ford contract, pretty much.
Yes.
And you have your own people in the Key Studios. Was Eugene Bordenay there at that time?
He was at the company. He was a company man.
Oh, he's a company man.
Yeah, wasn't our man.
Yeah, okay. And did you, how did that work out? Did you have a good relationship?
No.
It didn't work out?
No.
What happened?
Gene, of course, was very hurt. He was very hurt to think he was no longer head of the styling.
Had he been?
Schneider and Oswald? Yep, he had been. So when I came into the picture, as a vice president, Crusoe saw to that.
Tell me about Mr. Crusoe.
Well, he was a finance man for General Motors, mm-hmm. and a very good one, mm-hmm. a pinch penny,
right.
And he watched it all the pennies go.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, we worked with him very closely. We had a very good relationship. Very few people did.
Now, he had been brought over to Ford by
Breech.
By Breech, yes. Mm-hmm.
But nobody get along with him. We got along with him.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't yes him.
Uh-huh.
We kidded with him all the time about something. He'd say, horseshit or something like that. Nobody would be allowed to say that because he'd fire him. But he did.
Uh-huh.
Maybe we'd be just lucky about that.
Uh-huh.
We're just lucky about that.
You and he hit it off pretty
good. We hit it off pretty good.
Yes. Now, he became increasingly influential in the
automobile
division.
Oh, yes, he did.
Yes.
He was very good. And he was Beach's right-hand man for his whipping post.
Yes, right, for finance and cost-cutting. So When did you get your vice presidency? Was that in 52?
That was just before they made Graffy a vice president. That was in
56?
No, 55.
55, okay. Yeah. So the years between 1950 and 55, what models do you remember as being key creations of your unit?
Well, nearly all of them had something to do with it. Right. Right after that, as we got in as vice president, they established that, and then we went to town. Mm-hmm. We were no longer consultants, we were top dogs.
How did that come about? Who was the one who decided that you should come in as vice president?
Well, Breach did, and Crusoe. Uh-huh.
You were having problems with the current design staff, and you were working.
Yeah, that's right. They had to have a head of it.
Right.
They were never had a head of it.
Right. Uh-huh.
And what's his name? The guy that was running the styling. He was an automobile man years ago.
You've become a vice president now in 1955 at Mr. Breach's behest and with Henry's concurrence.
Very good.
And you've taken over the complete
styling
operation.
All operations.
And everybody now reports to you.
Yes.
So could you explain in some detail, Mr. Walker, just how the models progressed, the years progressed during your tenure as vice president?
Well, I just have to think back. Little things.
Things that occurred.
Everything seemed to run very smooth, as could be under the circumstances of anybody going into a big organization. After they've had all this time that Mr. Ford Sr. had guided them, but the way he wanted to guide them. Uh-huh. Young Henry didn't want that to happen. He wanted to have individuals and get the work done, to get this organization the way he wanted. And with Breach, Crusoe, and that staff, they got it pretty good. Mm-hmm. Until I brought Craffy in. When Craffy came in.
Richard Craffy.
Yeah.
Where had he been? Was he at Lincoln first?
Well, he was in charge of the Lincoln, yes.
Yes.
Production. Mm-hmm. Then they had him on a special call, a special car, special design.
Special products.
Special products. Mm-hmm. And then they were trying to create this car called the Edsel, which they didn't know what the name was at the time. Special car.
The E-car, yeah.
E-car. So they made him the vice president. No, they didn't. I was made a vice president before he was, because he, over at the rotunda one day, they were having lunch with somebody, and I had to go over there for some reason, and Benson shook hands with me and said, "Congratulations." I said, "What for?" Uh-huh. I didn't know I was. He said, "Well, you were just made a vice president." I said, "Why the hell did somebody tell me?" I really said that to him. And Benson said, "Well," he said, "you are." He said, "We created that." Then Craffy was staring over the face about 4 feet long and said, never said thank you, or never said congratulations. Uh-huh. And for a long time, we didn't even speak.
Oh, dear.
I don't know why, he was just that.
He wouldn't speak to you?
No, he was just mad because he wasn't made a vice president. Then finally he was.
Uh-huh. With disastrous results.
Very bad. Yeah. See what he did? He went out knowing nothing about people.
Uh-huh.
He hired garage guys. Mm-hmm. Garage people that had an old broken down garage and made them an Edsel dealer. And they knew nothing about business. Most of these, this is part of, not all of it, of course.
Yes.
But, for instance, a fellow in Fort Lauderdale by the name of Martinez, never was in the business before, and he bought into a garage, and then they made it into a dealership, and they had a big flurry around with flags and all, and the new Edsel. They gave me one to drive, and I was in Fort Lauderdale at the time. Gave me one to drive, and then the guy said, "You have a car sent over by Ford Motor Company, a new Edsel, the white one." I got in, drove it down, and as I got down, the ramp, boom, it fell apart.
Oh, my
gosh. I got out of the car and I said, "But call Martinez right away." Martinez didn't know what to do. He said, "I have to call Detroit." He said, "I don't know anything about these cars." So that's the same thing that happened, and with everything. Then the advertising, what was the name of the company, advertising?
Foot Cone and Bell.
Foot Cone and Bell. They got all mixed up and got quite a fight with Henry about how Crafty, and they always said that's where Mr. Crafty wanted it. Instead of saying, Henry, we're trying to do this for the company. And the guy that was head of it, he came down one time. And they got quite a tailspin about it. And they kept it on getting worse and worse. They kept losing money. Everything was falling apart. So they finally decided to throw it out. After too long, they waited too long.
Too long. Tell me about the design aspect of the Edsel. I think you assigned Roy Brown to it, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Had Roy been with you for some time?
No, not too long.
Mm-hmm. But
he didn't work for me.
Oh, he didn't?
He came out from GM mm-hmm. and got the job with Gene.
Gene Bourdain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then he Crafty picked him up and wanted him to do the car.
Oh, it was Crafty's idea.
Yeah.
Nice.
We weren't allowed in that room.
Oh, really?
No.
Special products were doing it all by themselves.
I have a special car.
Uh-huh.
Benson's. That was Benson Ford's father. And Benson Ford's father kept on.
Ah.
That's it.
Okay. And so, what kind of a job did you think Roy did? Did you think he...
Well, he meant good. He tried.
Uh-huh.
He had a bad staff. Mm-hmm. He did he let dictation do the work.
Oh, really?
Like Crafty. Crafty would say, I don't like that. Now, Crafty in Florida, when I was just before this thing happened with the breach,
mm-hmm.
coming into my house and telling them that Ford had to have it, Crafty had an instrument panel. And Henry told him to go down and show it to Walker in Bell Harbor.
Uh-huh.
He didn't want to do it.
Uh-huh.
Finally, he did.
Uh-huh.
And he said, my staff, he said, wants it this way. I said, well, what he came and showed me for. That's what his staff was. Well, he said we had research, and the research was that we called all our research to Toledo. Yeah, Toledo, I said, there's a truck company, it's a town. I said, they're all the truck drivers. I said, that's terrible. And they said, that's the way it's going to be, because they like that instrument panel.
They went to Toledo and did the research, research?
Yeah, I said, wait, Crafty did.
And that doesn't sound like Dave Wallace. Dave Wallace is sharp at the end. Emma Judge, of course.
Yeah.
So Crafty pretty much called the shots.
He did. Yeah, everything he did. Of course, Emmett had to build a house up in Harbor Springs.
Did
he? Above me.
Uh-huh.
Now, you see him there, Crafty. He was a kid about it.
I'll bet.
He said, I was the only one that wasn't fired.
Pardon?
He was the only one that wasn't fired.
That's right. Gail Warnock is out here in Arizona.
Gail is up here in Phoenix.
Yeah. Do you see him again?
No.
Yeah. Well, it was a mistake all around, wasn't it? The Edsel just really didn't come off.
Badly engineered. $250 million they threw out the window. And we didn't get a bonus that year.
No, because
none of it.
Yeah. Badly engineered. The dealer organization was ramshackle.
Very, very bad. All the way through, every single thing was not predicated on good common sense.
Doyle who handled the dealership, and that was bad.
That was bad. He was so bad that they threw him out of Ford.
Right.
And then they took on that. Well, even see, with the warranty, he was good,
mm-hmm.
very good. But his hands were tied mm-hmm. by one guy, Crafty. Everything they did to Crafty had to do it.
Yeah.
And he was kind of a grafter too. It's too bad.
Well, what's more important in these years? You had a tremendous success with the Thunderbird. Can you tell us a bit about how the Thunderbird came to be?
Well, the story was that we saw the sketch, a sketch,
mm-hmm.
and it was one just like Oris's and one just like what's his name from Ben Harbor.
Member of your staff?
No.
Oh.
A young fellow, the blackboard man. He wasn't a designer, the blackboard man. Again, he put...
Not Boyer?
No, not Boyer.
Not Cleo?
No, I don't think of his name.
Okay.
So, we saw these sketches and we liked them.
Mm-hmm.
And then what Horace did is to take the body and made a different body out of it.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the details, differentness of the sketch. But there was a similarity. A similarity, to the average guy, it was a similarity. To a guy that was trained, no, you could see that was one. That was the other. So, Orson took it, and I gave Orson to go ahead to make that car. Mm-hmm. That was my job. So Henry and I were over in Europe looking at the, I have to say that because...
Please do.
We're looking at the automobile show. And on the way back to the Plaza Anthony, he said, George, why don't we have a sports car? I said, you have. Where? He said, when you get back, you'll see it. He said, I didn't know anything about this. I said, we didn't want you to. So I got back to Plaza and called George. Told him, get that car ready, all slick, and wanted the best it can.
What were you, it was going to be an eighth size or a quarter size?
This is a full size.
Full size, full size clay. Okay, good.
So when Henry got back, first day of his duties was to come over to Styling and see that car. Uh-huh. He fell in love with it right away.
Really?
So that's it.
And that was it?
Yeah. And that was the way they did the Continental. Not our Continental. The Continental was done in 19 with the square radiator. See, the Continental Alto was Elwood's car to a point. Mm-hmm. And then there were a few appointments that distinguished it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. So when 1970...
Thunderbird. Do you remember some of the people the ones who came up with the name, or?
No. That's been told so many times, but they haven't been very straight. People take credit.
Right.
No, I can't. I would. A lot of people wrote in and said they.
Yes.
Then we heard this, that Breach was joining the Thunderbird Club out in Palm Springs.
Oh, yes.
Play golf. Mm-hmm. Came back one day and said to Henry, he said, if you can't think of a name, he said, why don't you call it Thunderbird?
Uh-huh. This Henry is Ernie
said,
Breach.
Yeah, Henry said, that's it. Then they gave it credit to somebody else because the inner department, he would be getting $500.
And he wrote it.
Yeah, so.
And he did a little design, and I think he won a contest. Was it the contest that Crusoe had about a suit of clothes or something like
that? That's it. That's about it. That's about all.
Well, it was an incredibly successful car. Yes. Structurally, you had a really good...
It was very, very good, and it was very, very good detail of work on it.
Right, yes.
And Orris did that detail beautifully.
That was pretty much Orris's work.
Elwood helped, but not fully. Mm-hmm. Like, Elwood was charged more with the Lincoln stuff.
That's right, yeah.
And Orris was in charge of that Thunderbird. Mm-hmm. So we certainly give Orris the credit.
Yes.
And then, of course, Iacocca picks it up and says.
what was your contact with Iacocca at this point?
Well, he was sales manager during that time.
Ford Division?
Yeah, Ford Division. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have much contact with him.
Not much contact, because he wasn't a designer.
No. And so he keeps taking credit for the Mustang, and he didn't do the Mustang. Orris did the Mustang.
Exactly. Now, do you remember a gentleman named Tom Case at this point?
Yes,
period?
Yes. Tom Case became the liaison between
the marketing.
Marketing. And Tom then wrote an article, and he takes credit.
He takes credit for it.
Yeah, I read that article. And somebody said it to
there's
me.
A recent book by someone who says that Boyer is the architect, the design architect. So that's why I wanted to get the full story from you.
It's like any other design. We had, we'll say, 50 clay modelers.
Right.
50 clay modelers designed it. That's what we say.
Yeah.
They can't, none of them could draw, but they were clay modelers. They worked on the design. And each day that they did anything, bit of clay modeling, they said, this is mine, this is mine. Come home that night to the family, and they have their hamburgers. And how'd you do today, Joe? Well, I did this and I did that, and some bitch is trying to take credit for it. Everybody was trying to take credit for it. The creativity of man is that they want it, that's theirs, and don't take it away from
them. Of course, you can applaud that instinct.
Oh, sure.
But under your direction, it was pretty much Joe Orris's.
Yeah.
What other models in the mid-50s were you, that you're especially proud of that you turned down?
Well, I should say all of them, because they all made money for the company. And that was my story time and time again. If I can make money for the people that pay me, then I've satisfied what I did. That's all my industrial design throughout, just like the clock business. Mm-hmm. If we can make money by designing a new clock, that was fine. That was for the company, not
good.
For us.
Good.
And for refrigerators, the same thing. Over 3,000 products that we have done. to a woman's point of view, and her whims must everybody cater, because her vote is most influential in any home product.
And now, this was the Gruno refrigerator, or the Admiral?
Admiral, Gruno, Detrola, Apex, before that Apex, Cleveland, and they did all their washing machines. And then Electromaster for all stove, an awful lot of them. I can say I'd have to go through, every time I go through the alphabet, I think of two or three more.
Well, you can safely say that you had a lot to do with the design of a lot of household products from the late 30s to mid-40s.
Yeah, nearly everything a woman touched, we did. Mm-hmm. We tell that story.
The automobile business was at about this time becoming very conscious of the woman's place in ordering and buying the automobile.
It used to be that the man would put his thumbs in his suspenders and look around and kick the tires and say, "Well, I guess I'll get that." He never asked the old lady. Then it got to the point where the woman came in and said she liked the color, she liked the fabric. She liked the steering wheel, she liked the cylinder. Yeah. She became a factor. Then the salesman glued himself to the woman.
Sure.
And she was very instrumental.
Right.
Because 82% of all merchandise purchased are purchased by women.
Right.
Car is fundamental to men.
Exactly. Yeah. What were your relations at this point with William Clay Ford? He had come up with a proposal to make a new Continental.
That was very good. He and Reinhardt.
He and John
and Reinhardt. That was a nice car.
Mm-hmm.
Too much money.
They
lost money. $1,000 a day.
Really?
Yeah.
This was the Mark II?
Yeah, Mark II.
Now, they did get it into production.
Yes, they did.
56.
I had one. I had two of them.
Did you?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And was it well engineered?
Well, no.
It wasn't?
No. Some parts of it was, some parts weren't. It had a heater right underneath the seat.
Oh, really?
And my ass was so big. I sat down on it and I squashed that heater. And it burned the seat and burned my hand on a winter day.
That's incredible.
It was awful bad.
What was it doing under the seat?
That's the only way they could put the heater.
Oh, I see.
And see, down below, they couldn't have room for it. So they put it right underneath the seat.
Uh-huh.
And it was very bad engineering. Oh, there was a lot wrong with it. But I liked it. I had
it. Style, didn't it?
Style.
Yeah,
no, first one of the style.
That was probably John Reinhardt's.
Yeah, John had not doing it.
Yeah. But you had Harley Kopp and Gordon Burick, two well-known body engineers.
Well, Gordon was a good, you know, but Gordon was also a blackboard man at Auburn. That was when he did the cord.
Uh-huh.
But he had a lot of ingenuity to him. He liked it.
Uh-huh.
And his liking for it was he became a very good designer.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a good job. Gordon did a very good job.
Mm-hmm. And Harley Kopp, what was his contribution?
Harley Kopp was an engineer, only engineer.
A what?
Only an engineer.
Yeah, right.
Harley was a monthly guy for a month. That's all.
He's still going strong.
He probably is.
But apparently the decision was made that it was too expensive and they were losing too much money on the market.
The breach closed it up.
And so just shut it down.
The staff was bad. Bill had hired all his old Yale guys.
Oh, uh-huh.
Put them all in big Kopp jobs. Including Crappy.
Uh-huh.
And Crappy helped him, mm-hmm. whatever he did. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
But the car was a nice car.
Uh-huh. They're just too expensive.
Yeah.
Was it $10,000?
Yeah, I don't remember.
The price. I guess Mr. Breach was instrumental in closing, as you said before.
Yeah, he closed down,
They
had a fight with Henry, quite a fight, because that was an Edson Ford. That was before the Edson car came out, but that was Edson Ford's baby.
Yeah,
he started. Because Bill then picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
He appointed Bill ahead of it.
Yes.
New products.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
Special products.
Mm-hmm. And Crappy got on the bandwagon. Uh-huh. And then all the Yale guys were all sitting around on desks with their feet talking about it. Old days. He'd go over there and the same old story.
Well, Bill was pretty disheartened when they
closed
the town. So
he didn't have a job.
He didn't have a job. So what did he do?
Then I was in White Sulphur Springs, and that's when I was still vice president.
The late 50s?
Yeah, late 50s. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he said to me, George said, we're going to do a new thing. We're going to appoint Bill as a chief stylist for the company. He has the job, and this is what I'd like to have you do. But report to me every time he doesn't show up. I said, Henry, how could I do that? He's your brother. I said, how the hell could I do that? I said, I'd have to spend more time. He said, yeah, you'd have to spend more time over a martini. I said, well, I said, I just couldn't do that. I said, I couldn't do that. But that was what he needed. He'd just come in at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning. He wouldn't pay attention to what, styling or anything else. He'd sit down and start talking on the telephone for football players.
Oh, yes.
Eddie Anderson.
By then he was heavily involved with the Detroit Lions. Yeah. Now he had a couple of men that you remember, Dick Morris and George Haviland.
Morris was the guy I was trying to think of that was over in Europe.
But, yes, right.
Dick Morris. Yeah. Breach cassette of his belt's toilet paper. He called mass vipers. Hated it. And Dick was the type of guy that just dedicated himself just to Bill.
Right. Yeah, and I think George too.
And George too.
Yes, right.
But he took George from my end of it and put him on his staff.
See, George, he was your.
He was my guy.
In the styling.
Yeah.
I see.
Very good.
George retired about.
Did he?
Oh, he retired in a year ago last January. And he says it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's his favorite expression of it.
Yeah, I know. He had always. Chibless. I like George very well.
So Bill was given a sort of an honorary title, but you were still vice president for styling. Yeah.
And Bill never paid any attention to styling. Yeah. He didn't know.
Yes.
But he should have known because he worked with Reinhardt. He wanted me to hire Reinhardt, and I said I couldn't hire Reinhardt. Mm-hmm. John was a good boy. I knew him way before he went to Ford. Mm-hmm. He do special work for me. Mm-hmm. I had my own office.
Right.
But John would say, would you like a stick of gum? And he'd laugh and kid all about a stick of gum instead of what he was doing. Well, he was just, it's like a kid that never grew up.
Yeah. Now, he went on with U.S. Steel.
Yes. Bill got him that job.
Did he?
Very good. Very good job.
And it worked out fairly well for him.
Very well. Yeah. I don't know what he does now.
He's retired.
Yes.
Yeah, right. So, but even though the Continental was axed, you and Mr. Engel still had the Lincoln going very strong.
Yep, we did. Yep, we did. And then when they appointed Ben Mills as manager,
tell us about Ben.
Well, Ben was a nice guy, presumably, and a great golfer, a former quiz kid, and but he didn't know too much about automobiles.
Yeah,
he knew his finances.
Yes.
And Breach never did care too much for him, which I understand, as well as Crusoe. Mm-hmm. And when Crusoe got a heart attack, but just before that he was going to let change from Ben Mills to, let's see, who else we're going to be. Well, they were going to bring back a guy that worked for me at one time.
Who's that?
Oh, gosh. He went out to school teacher. He was a school teacher.
With you in the styling business?
Yep. He was our manager when I first got in there. Breach appointed him because he was so smart. And I was not smart as my own business. I could run a small business, but never to that kind of an organization. Uh-huh. And he knew it. Uh-huh. And that was where Breach was smart to know how to pick people. Mm-hmm. And so he appointed this guy as my manager. Very good. Very good. That's.
He was your administrative
head. Administrative manager. And then he wanted to be the manager of Lincoln, and he tried to get that job. Uh-huh. Then they appointed Ben Mills for it. Uh-huh. Then they wanted to bring him back. Crusoe was going, and then he had a heart attack. And that was it.
Oh, dear. But the Lincolns were going fairly well. Was Elwood Engel heading that up?
Yes, he was. And what we did was to win with Engel, won a lot of honors for that car. Very well styled car, and still is. Not the one I got. I don't like that style.
Okay.
It's kind of crappy. They could do so much more with it. I don't know what the hell's the matter with them.
You did still keep, though, maybe it wasn't your idea, but the salespeople did keep the mark designation, though, for 58, 59, 60, didn't they? became the Mark III, IV, and V. Yeah.
The Mark III was the best balanced car that ever put out. The Mark III. Uh-huh. That's the first
one.
1958. Yeah.
Right.
Very balanced. You can see a car, you can tell by the wheels. And the way it is, the silhouette, well, we can because that's our job.
Sure.
Of what kind of a car it is. And it's a wonderful car. Uh-huh. And then they changed it. And instead of making the Thunderbird out of it, they could have been very well, made it called the Thunderbird. Uh-huh. Changed a little bit here and there. And we had another wonderful car, but they took the Thunderbird and they spoiled it. They made a mess of it. Then the next one they made a mess of. Then now today, it's like a Mark. Looks just like a Mark. Mm-hmm. Which is not good because the Mark looks like a Thunderbird.
Right.
And I don't know what the hell to think of. Of course, I can't criticize too much because they would take the car away from me. They give us a new car every year.
Do they?
Yeah.
That's marvelous.
This is their car, not mine.
Can you tell us a little bit about Bob McNamara? Did you come in contact with him when he was with Ford Division?
Very well. Bob was a very nice guy. Very smart. Too smart. Uh-huh. Too smart.
What input did he have into design, any at all?
No. He wasn't a designer, so he...
But you would ask him to come down to the presentation?
Yes, yes, I did, yeah.
He and young Henry get along pretty well?
To a point.
To a point, yeah.
See what he was doing. It was in the paper where Bob McNamara, so-and-so, was on the Democratic side with Kennedy.
Oh.
And a paper headline. Mm-hmm. Henry got up at the management meeting and said, I am so surprised to see two of our top executives talking and acting to try to, where the Republicans are making the country safe and so on and so on. And they're trying to just do the opposite.
Who was the other one?
An engineer, I forget what his name was.
Yeah.
And Bob and this guy got right up out of the audience and walked out.
Uh-huh.
And then, started packing his stuff, going to quit. Henry had to go up there and plead with him not to quit. Told him how bad he was, how sorry he was. Then Bob came back for just a short time, then went with Kennedy.
McPherson had come in as engineer.
Yeah,
younger. How did he work out?
Well, he was just an engineer.
Uh-huh.
Typical.
Yeah.
Mad at everybody. Nothing was right.
Did you have any battles with him?
Yeah, a lot of them.
Did you?
Yeah.
Who won them?
That I don't know. But a lot of the things he was talking to Donovan. Do you know Donovan? Leo Donovan?
Yes.
Leo Donovan.
Mm-hmm, right.
He's talking to Leo Donovan, which was a friend of mine, standing there one day. And he said, McPherson, goddamn, you know what I think of these goddamn designers? It's a bunch of fairies. And I said, if I ever hear you say that, I'm going to knock you right on your ass. He was vice president, and I was. And I was too. His face turned purple. I said, don't get in my way ever. Don't you ever get in my way. He said, Breach told me, what the heck? He went McPherson. I said, well, a remark he made in front of Leo Donovan. He said, what? As if we were a bunch of fairies. I said, I told him I'd knock him right on his ass forever. So he stayed out of my way for a long time, but he bucked us every time he could. Yeah, every time he could.
There was a continual battle.
Yeah, that's a big organization. Bound to have it. Breach said that. He said, you got to be able to take it.
Yeah,
you better be able to take it.
And he would often pit two people against each other. But on the whole, the 50s was very good for Ford. You had some very successful.
Yes. We went pretty good sledding all the way through because we did our thing, did it good, and Elwood did his work very good. Well, we got off base a couple of times, not with me, but with the company.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably heard that story.
No.
But he had a group of people working to hurry up and finish a job at night.
Right.
And he did what Walker, he said that what Walker would do. Hire, get candy, get new slippers for these guys, get sneakers, so they can hurry up and get their work done.
Sure.
And get a radio, get two radios, one over here and one over there. Mm-hmm. So he went out and bought that stuff. They had the guys do it for him. And they overloaded it. And then somebody squealed on him and told him that what he'd done. And one of the guys is supposed to, he told him, he said, who's going to pay for this? He said, put it on. He says, if you worked overtime. That was bad. That was the bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't then from then on, Breach told me, he said, that would did a bad thing, he said. Mm-hmm. It's very bad. Uh-huh. So he would like Elwood, but he... So he was on the verge of quitting.
Oh, dear.
And then Tex Colbert wanted to know who our men were that was leaving Ford after I left retired. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I told him, number one was Elwood. Mm-hmm. He contacted Elwood and hired him. Made Elwood $4 million.
Yes. Well, I guess it was on the strength of you're in his 1960 or 61 Continental, wasn't
it? I don't
Lincoln?
Know what it was. But,
yeah.
But he wanted to, he wanted somebody to head it up. Mm-hmm. But I didn't do it. He did it. But mm-hmm. I told him that he was leaving.
Yeah.
But they thought I did it.
Yeah.
So I went around. You know. Walker was bad. So I was at the surf club. I went from the surf club one day to Palm Beach.
Uh-huh.
And when I got back, the telegram, and Henry said, under our contract, we have the privilege of using your services or discontinue. Mm-hmm. That 30-day notice, something.
Uh-huh.
That's all.
What had happened? Did you ever find out what happened?
Nope, I never did.
Dr. Breach? Now, Breach?
Breach told me, he said, well, he said, the only thing is that happened that I know. He said, we were in a director's meeting, and a director that also is a director of Chrysler, but an art director, mm-hmm. had said that, that you had called Tex Colbert, told Tex to hire Elwood Engel.
Which was just the opposite.
It wasn't that at all. But, yeah. But then he said, now if that's not so, you go and call Henry and sit down with Henry and iron that one out.
Mm-hmm.
I said, there's no use in doing it. That's not so, but because I know that sure. I can do it, but I'm not going to do it because I said, if Henry didn't, he kept telling everybody he thought more of me than he did his own two brothers
yeah.
all his years
right.
and had my confidence in making him millions of dollars.
Sure.
He said, if he doesn't have any better sense than that, sit down with him.
Was
so when Bunky Newsom had a party at his house in Broomfield, Henry was there. First time I'd seen Henry for a long time.
This was years later?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Henry came over and put his arm around me. I miss you. I said, I miss you too. And I walked away from him.
That was it.
Yeah, and Henry, and Breach said, you shouldn't have done that. He was there. I said, well, I don't operate that way.
Uh-huh.
He said, I know you don't. I said, that was that.
Uh-huh.
You didn't want my services? Hell no.
Yeah.
I didn't want his. I didn't need his money.
20 years of...
Yeah. I didn't need his money. He didn't need mine.
Mm-hmm.
So...
But
the stories went around. After you leave a organization, they got you pinned. One of the stories was that... Oh, I went out there to see Bill Ford, and two guards grabbed me by the arm.
Really?
And took me outside. That never happened. No, Bill Ford called me one day and said, have lunch together. So we had lunch together.
Mm-hmm.
That's all after all this had happened.
Uh-huh.
I'd come up from Florida and just, well, what I came up for, I came up.
Uh-huh.
I still lived in Bloomfield.
Mm-hmm.
And we had lunch and that's all there was to it. No uh-huh. guards around or anything.
You kept up your relationship with
Bill was Bill. Very good, yeah. Bill, yeah. Bill was very nice.
Basically a nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stupid, but nice.
Ben had a lot of problems too.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah.
Ben would go by my house in Florida and toot every time he did, wave. We'd see each other at Key Largo and mm-hmm. down Key Largo.
He had a boat too, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, he had a nice boat.
Yeah.
And we had dinner together many times. Oh, we had a good relationship.
That's good.
Yeah. And Edie, his wife. But, so.
Well, it was a good association.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it went on for a good...
Where do you want to go now?
Well, I would like you to, in the time remaining, which we have about 5 minutes, I'd like you to discuss your design philosophy, the principles that have guided you all through your career as an industrial designer.
Well, I'll say this, Ron.
Yes.
For 65 years, I've seen this styling idea coming closer and closer to the thing that really counts. And that's a well-designed product that millions of hands will stretch out to buy because it says something to them that they cannot resist. And the stylist, professional stylist, realizes when right lines and contours are applied to a product, that they must evoke that particular emotion in that buyer, so our new designer desired by manufacturer and dealer. And this they regard as a mysterious, indefinable something, which is an attribute to good sense appeal. Mm-hmm. Is that all right?
That's right.
And then a good stylist does not give a pretty picture to a manufacturer and say, that's yours, make it. Mm-hmm. If he wants to earn his money, he's got to research sales, research manufacturing, research the product, all the materials, and put them all together and create a desire to make it. Mm-hmm. And that is fundamentally my basic principle of styling. Mm-hmm. Research it and give the manufacturer the best you know how. And it's a job of selling. It's a job of good experience, good knowledge of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You cannot take a product and immediately start to tell that that's it. You've got to see it and you've got to research it. Mm-hmm. That's about all there is to it. A good philosophy is don't let them tell you, because too many get overzealous and want to be the boss. Mm-hmm. Every guy that has a couple dollars in the company wants to be the boss. Like Jim Nance used to. Jim Nance called me one day in Chicago and said, Laura, his wife's name was Laura. He said, George, said, Laura's got a new designer over here. She's hiring for us, our interiors. I said, well, she can do it, but not for Ford Motor Company. Jim, I said, I'm the boss. Mm-hmm. She hasn't come to me about it.
Sure.
I said, we've got a whole organization to do that, not there, not to do outside. Well, Laura is a good, I said, that didn't make any difference. You know, I know I like Laura very well, but not, she can't do that. Mm-hmm. So I told that to Henry. He said, did that son of a bitch do that?
Was this when he was head of the MEL division?
Yeah.
Jim Nance?
Yeah.
They brought him in after crafting
that,
yes.
But Laura was, he got a little bit overstepped herself.
Well, your career really is sort of a marvelous example of taking men and accounts and putting the right men on the right accounts and giving them their head and telling
That's
them
right.
to design what they felt.
And what we did is to pick out the brains of a good designer, mm-hmm. and make them do that job. And always fundamentally and in their mind, make the money for the guy that's hiring you. Mm-hmm. Do the best you can and don't do anything that is going to disturb it. Mm-hmm. Because you've got to have your other contract will be up. Mm-hmm. And they can say, how many dollars have we made?
Mm-hmm. What's impressed me as I look over your extensive portfolio and the marvelous things that you turned out is that you were always about a decade ahead of everybody.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
We don't know. It's like I said that about our schooling. I draw every day, uh-huh. and it's like this. There's a piece of paper around all wrong, mm-hmm. but that's exercise. I do it automatically, uh-huh. and the reason for it is that that's my job. It's something inherent in me, all starting all the time, morning, noon, and night. Uh-huh. Even my clothes. I'm not dressed now, but I wouldn't go out without a tie. They kid me about it all the time.
I've seen that, yeah.
All the time.
But the drawings you did back in the late 30s and the early 40s and the marvelous service organization you set up for the U.S. Armed Forces, all of this was way ahead of everybody.
We were always thinking ahead. That was our job. The creativity in ourselves.
Here you are in 1941 advocating plastics, which was just in its infancy. Yeah. Advocating light metals like aluminum, and all of this way ahead, and the designs, the completed designs.
Well, we got into more than that. When we did the tires for Goodyear, mm-hmm. they used to make a complete mold of about 1/8 size of a tire, about that big, and then they would do the double for double, you know, the design on top.
Yeah, right.
When we did that, we said we got something better than that. And we did a tire for the Goodyear, which they saved money, but not on to try to do what they did before, because we had another idea.
Right.
And it proved very, very good for them, so they made money on it.
Uh-huh.
That, again, is making money for the company.
Uh-huh.
And that saved our job, and each year that they were going to make a new contract.
Well, that's interesting, but I still don't find the reasons why your designs were so forward-looking, so ahead of their time.
If it's to toot our own horn, it's just still creativity and creating all our lives, trying to create something to make it beautiful.
You never stood still.
No.
You were always looking
ahead. Just like we don't know. Uh-huh. The paintings show that.
Right, yeah.
They say everybody that has seen the paintings, professionals have seen the paintings, that how can you still do pretty girls? Oh, how can you still, at your age? I said, well, that doesn't mean a damn. If you got that instinct in you, you should do it. And because it goes through one arm, comes out the other, that's all.
Yes.
By the end.
Well, you never looked backward.
No.
You were the modern designer personified.
Between Harley Earl, Raymond Loy, and myself, I think we have done more for the industry than anybody could have done.
I think you have.
We have, because we feel that way. In our own minds, now that we are out of the picture, we feel as if what we have done to satisfy our own self. And I think Harley would have felt the same way if he were alive.
Yes.
And Raymond Loy, I know, feels that way.
Right.
And I feel that way.
Mr. Loy is still near the Plath Athenae. I think he's not too far.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. You should get in touch with him. You should.
I would if I was over there. I went over 26 times.
Did you?
Yeah, we used to go to the automobile show. And I always used to see him every time I went there.
So you see yourself as a triumvirate with Loewy, Earl, and Warren.
Yeah.
The modern industrial designers. Yep.
That's what. Yeah, Norman Bell Geddes was one of the beginners of industrial design.
Yes.
Yeah, from Cleveland. He's a very good man. A very theatrical man.
Mm-hmm.
And then Henry Dreyfuss was on, I'd say, number two from that.
Right.
And number three would be all the work. And industrial design.
Yes.
Yeah, from Cleveland. He's a very good man. And a very theatrical man.
Mm-hmm.
And